A Better World with Mitch Raven, Mondays and Wednesdays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to A Better World. This is your host, Mitchell J. Raven, and I'm very glad you're joining us again today. In a world that is just ravaged with pain and suffering, to hear a little Mozart in the middle of the evening, oh, so beautiful. We get a moment of liberation through music, through sound, and a moment of healing. And dealing with the suffering that is going on in our planet, largely as a result of what has happened very recently in Japan, we'll be speaking today at some length about that, but from a couple of interesting points of view, based on my two guests, who are very dear colleagues and friends of mine. We're going to be looking at this whole phenomenon from an energetic point of view, and how this whole phenomenon is somehow related to some kind of deep aspect of the human psyche, the collective psyche, and how this eruption in one place of our earth is somehow connected to and expressive of all of us, including, of course, Gaia, Mother Earth herself, as a living system and being. And we will be looking at the subject of Japan, and any number of things, including the upsurge of alternatives to our ordinary way of thinking, our customized, standardized, conventional way of thinking that has, I dare say, over and over again, has brought us to this point of demise, this brink, literally, of disaster, or have we already tipped into it? And looking, we will look at that from a cyclical point of view, from the point of view of time cycles, the larger and the smaller turns of the cyclical wheel. And for that, we have a very good friend and colleague who we've had on the show before, David Katzmeier. He is the inventor of Calorhythms, which you can find at www.calorhythms.com. Spelt as you would spell it in Sanskrit. I know you all know how to do that. K-A-L-A, that is. And David has put together a way of understanding the nature of phenomena on the planet that, well, it relates to cycles of our emotional, as you would imagine, intellectual, physical, and ultimately spiritual selves as we ebb and flow, just like the water coming into the shore or leaving. And additionally, we have another good friend, Tracy Ingram, who I know from the world of energy medicine and vibrational healing. And Tracy has a most interesting background, and it will be coming to bear in today's conversation, really rather significantly. A little bit on Tracy is that he is a modern-day Renaissance man, I love it, who was, it doesn't say this, but it should read, born a Reiki master and computer expert, because he's been doing it for so long and his chronological age doesn't quite reflect that, blending his intuitive gifts to fix problems in productive and proactive ways before they actually happen. Okay, so put that into your pipe and smoke it. Former system administrator for Walden University, Tracy has led a team that supported the internal and external help desks for 39 countries on behalf of the university. As a technological mystic, Tracy uses his left and right brains to help companies find simple solutions to complex issues. His company, Intention Technology, helps to make technology both available and seamless. I like that idea of technology disappearing so we can simply use it. It's sort of like, you know, concerns of the body disappearing because it's so super healthy. It doesn't have its aches and pains and bumps and grinds. You're just fit. And technology fitness is another idea, you know. Well, welcome to you both. I'm so glad to have you both on.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. I want to just say before we launch into a conversation that there's something also very fitting to share with you that this coming weekend in New York City, for those of you who are near or who would like to get near, there will be a workshop being run by a gentleman named Meyer Schneider, who is coming in from the West Coast, to teach how to develop better eyesight and vision. And you've heard of this kind of thing before, and many people have been helped and have stopped wearing glasses as a result of his workshops and others that are similar. What's interesting about Meyer is that he was born legally blind. And even with that diagnosis, he was able to teach himself and develop his eyesight through exercises and consciousness. So he now teaches this to others. And he will be in New York, and there's information about this at our website, www.abetterworld.net, under events. So come visit, and if you are in New York or can get near New York for this weekend, I think it would be worth your while. So, with that said, the subject I want to really address first and foremost is something that is on everybody's mind. It's in the background listening. It's everywhere. Whether we're talking about it consciously or not, we are all super aware of what is really going on across the world, in Japan, across from where we sit here in New York. And we are, on one hand, deeply moved to tears, actually, for the suffering of our brothers and sisters in Japan, because it wasn't enough, as we say in Chinese, that they get hit by a 9.0 or 9.1 earthquake, which the world has really seen very few of at that magnitude. Very few. And then a tsunami, which, again, really very rare in recorded history that we have tsunamis. And so one followed another in rapid succession. And no. That wasn't enough either. Also, that the nuclear plant developed by General Electric, their most inferior one of all time, happens to be sitting on a fault line as well in Sendai, Japan. And this whole thing is just a complete disaster. And as with any nuclear calamity, it's affecting everybody near and now far, all the way across the Pacific Ocean. That's one big ocean. And is now showing up, radioactivity showing up on the shores of California, our healthiest of all states. So I'd love to hear what the two of you have to say about this, and we will just have a roundtable discussion about who we are in this, what we can possibly do to help positively impact it, and what perhaps our listeners can learn about the nature of this situation, which can potentially impact us all. Not to say that back here in the United States, we have 103 nuclear plants currently operating, and 23 at least that are past or really near the 40-year point. So they were designed to have a whole life, not a half-life, of 40 years. And now the Atomic Energy Commission is looking to, based on lots of political influence, i.e. money being spread, that means corruption of elected officials and appointed officials who are to be scientifically accurate and impartial, are siding with the influence and the interests of the nuclear industry. So this, what is going on there, is actually the thumb pointing back to us. And who are we and what are we doing relative to our own nuclear morass? So, Tracy, would you give us a little thought about this, a little feedback?
Well, I mean, I think you really hit the nail on the head there, as everyone's really looking to see what can I do, you know, and what can I do besides just donating, you know, and what can I do to be a part of this? And, you know, when people have asked me that, you know, one of the things I always say is, you know, can you lend your energy to the rescue workers? There's so many people there who are now dealing with snow. They're dealing with the not only the radiation, and they're risking their own lives, but you know, when the rescue workers themselves start to lose hope that they can find anyone, you know, what are their chances of doing it? You know, there's so much in attitude. And you know, by you being able to lend your energy and lending, you know, your thoughts and prayers and focus to the rescue workers to help make them stronger, to help make them go that extra mile, lift up that extra board, lift up that extra thing, you know, which then, you know, now, you know, 8-9 days later, you're still finding people,
yes,
know, that are alive. And that's one of the ways that you can just lend your energy, you know, and even if you don't have the money to donate, you can still be a part of really trying to help the helpers. You know, help the people who are doing it, help the people who are on the ground, you know, by spreading the news and spreading the information. You know, it's really been interesting.
That's very powerful. That's, yeah, a very good point, because I've been noticing that even on our commercial conventional television reportage about this, the experts don't know what to say. They don't know anything really more than we do. We heard that they were getting access to electricity a few days ago, mm-hmm, and that would allow the cooling to take place that so desperately needs to take place in these pools for the fuel rods. And I noticed that the only thing they were actually coming back to was this idea of hope. They kept saying, well, we hope that the workers can pull this off. We hope that the electrical company will be able to do this. They had one message. Well, two. Number one, this was the subtext. We really don't know anything. We're on the air and we have to say something. And two, we hope and pray, even non-religious people, that something can happen. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people are really scared right now with this and looking at seeing, you know, they're just terrified. And when someone's scared like that, sometimes it's best if you give them, you know, something positive to put that energy into. Because worry, us sitting here worrying about it isn't a positive emotion that's going to help us in any way.
Exactly.
You know, what's really interesting from a technology standpoint is where this is one of the first, you know, disasters where, you know, the social media, the Twitter, the Facebook has really pushed a lot of the, not only the description of what's really going on, but a lot of the donations. So instead of donations coming in from a lot of normal means, a lot of the social networks and a lot of all of your online, you know, communities are really stepping up to really help and try to integrate and bring that help as a group versus a bunch of individuals. So you're really starting to see the power of these social changes.
Interesting. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Dave, I'd like to hear what you have to say about this from a point of view of cycles, because that's your expertise, but also just from you and what you perceive here.
I totally agree with what Tracy said. There's an interconnectedness to us all that I've observed in mass behavior moving in cycles. And consequently, there's a collective consciousness that moves us all. That's how you can have group behavior. That's how you can have trends. Are we going into Beatlemania, Generation X? Are we in the machine age, Romantic era, or the Baroque era of intellectualism or Renaissance or what have you? This is all because we're moving together with a collective consciousness. Now, for the first time, as we're moving out of the physically based machine age, which is over and declining, we're moving into a world of intellectualism, which means a virtual reality can play a role in helping. As Tracy said, you've got social media, which allows us to not pick up a shovel because we're not in proximity, or drive a car to look for people if you're living in another continent, but that you can pick up a computer. And it's a tool that can be as powerful as a shovel because it's going to help you instantly help get money to the proper respected agencies to assist those who do have the shovels. This is a virtual way. We're becoming more of a virtual world. And in the collective consciousness, the power of meditating, prayer, the 100th monkey syndrome, as it's been called, that interconnects us all. We have a mass consciousness. Do what you can by putting out the positive energy and helping, and with prayer and meditation and interconnectedness, because it's so important.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you cannot be geographically there, you have to reach out and touch someone, as they say, as best you can. From a point of view of cycles, you say the physical cycle is on the wane.
Yes.
What are you referring to? Can you expand upon that and give some more exact times?
Some of us are old enough to remember the 1970s. There was a fad of biorhythms when it was discovered that works that began in the 19th century were showing that there's a physical cycle, an emotional cycle, and an intellectual cycle moving as an internal rhythms with each one of us from the day that we're born. Now that we're understanding a little bit more of the monads of the universe, of the fractal relationship of everything and the interconnectedness, we can find that we are models of the civilizations that we make up. So just as there are physical highs and lows and emotional highs and lows, intellectual highs and lows within each of us, as we work together and build societies, we are having civilizations that also have physical highs and lows, emotional and intellectual highs and lows. But a civilization will go through the same pattern of cycles over greater periods of time because larger institutions are slower to change. Hence, there is such a thing as the biorhythms of the world. You have century-long cycles, centuries-long, of physical cycle, emotional cycle, and intellectual cycle, all moving at different durations, which mean at any time they can be in different positions. In short, the machine age of the past couple of hundred years came while the 336-year physical cycle was high, reached a peak, and that meant might makes right. That was the Industrial Revolution as soon as it crossed up early in the 19th century and gave us the machine age that we are now declining out of, because the cycle has recently in our lifetime gone back low. But while it was high, the emotional and intellectual cycles of the world were low. We were in the Victorian era, which meant that we were finding more ways to invest in power, but we didn't care because the emotional cycle was low. And we didn't realize that we were outbuilding our own sense because the intellectual cycle was low. And it's during that time that we developed nuclear reactors and nuclear power. We found more brilliant ways to do stupid things, and we're paying the price now.
God, yes. Well put, well put. Now, within any cycle, because a cycle essentially, as you're describing them, represent trends.
Yes.
So that is, you could say, the generic mean and meme of a time period, but within which there are any number of different fluctuations depending on who it is that's showing up on the planet at that given moment. Yes. And their own personal configuration.
Yes.
That is, let's say, contradistinct from the norm.
Yes.
So you will get an Einstein, you will get a Da Vinci, you will get a Gandhi, you'll get a Martin Luther King, you'll get people who are standing completely outside the box and the trends of the times, right? So what you're saying is, in a sense, probabilities, but is there a possibility of those singular beings who can actually shift a trend?
Yes, and it's happened, but...
i.e., what is the role of human will in light of the movement of one of these cycles?
Well, every stone thrown in the pond creates ripples, but we hear the expression that somebody was ahead of their time. And it could be if you have... Yes.
Interesting. That sheds a new light on that phrase, doesn't it?
It sheds a new light. If you have a brilliant intellectual during a low period in the cycles, that person's ahead of their time.
Hmm.
Or you might have brilliant inventions for helicopters, you know, long before they're developed, but if the physical cycle isn't quite high enough yet to match that kind of mechanical reasoning, you're ahead of your time.
Yeah.
And it won't be until a long time till that comes about. And I think that the idea of finding alternatives to destroying the planet, that idea is no longer ahead of our time. The reason being, as I was saying, the physical cycle going down, bringing the end to the machine age, is happening while something else is going on right now. The emotional cycle, which was low, and the intellectual cycle, which was low, ain't low no more. We're right now in the midpoint of transition, as both of these cycles are simultaneously becoming high again, setting the pace for the next couple hundred years.
So, just to get a bit more specific, during the last 8 years prior to Obama, that was the Bush-Cheney years, that was a physical high and an emotional and clearly an intellectual low.
Well, you could ask about the nations of the world, which last hundreds of years, or the cycles of the world hundreds of years, the cycles of a nation are only so many decades. The United States, you know, a nation moving in its little ups and downs within a world trend is like waves on a tide. And so the physical, emotional, intellectual cycles of the United States, like all nations, is 28 years, 36 years, and 44 years long, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
While in the world, they last for centuries. Now, in the United States, yes, we were in
so
a physical high.
So the larger the chasm,
yes,
if you will,
yes,
cosmos in the
yes
literal Greek sense, the longer the rhythms,
exactly,
the cycle.
Mm. Exactly.
So
we jumped
a mosquito would have a
now
real quick one.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, what is a day to us would not a day in the world lasts 12 years, and we're having a bad day.
That's the relationship.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Got it.
So
now, since we're on this so deep, let me ask: how is it that you determined what is the beginning of a cycle? Like, where do they begin?
In some countries,
how do you jump into that pool?
It varies from nation to nation. It usually comes at a time when a nation is born, which is easy to determine in the United States because it was the American Revolution. But it can also mean a period of upheaval and complete revolution, whereas an existing country will just go through such a transformation that you can consider it the beginning of a new nation, such as happened in the Soviet Union. The clock can reset at that time. And you look at some very old countries like Japan, which has such an ancient history, you know, you can't just say, well, this looks like a good point. Let's see the cycle start from this point. You really have to look at where they are and then trace backwards because it goes back so long. But in most cases, it's birth or revolution that will identify a beginning, and they all begin in the middle.
Now, you changed the birth date of the United States.
That was an interesting story when I was looking at the cycles. Now, going from the individual biorhythm level,
I mean, such audacity.
Well,
I think it's because you come from one of the original families. You felt that you could just do that.
Well, yes. On my mother's side, we've been here since the 1600s, settled in Virginia with a land grant from the.
You're older than you look.
Yes, you know, but I use Gary Knoll's products. Very helpful with that. But I think for some reason, you know, you talk about collective consciousnesses. Tracy talks about the interconnectedness. I think that in an awareness of what's happening in this country is basically born into me because our family's been here since before the United States. But I think it's also, it can be inherent in anybody that comes here, could come here today, because if you let yourself feel. And that's what we have to do right now, because it's so important that we realize the interconnectedness, because we are on a rising cycle right now. And when I talk about a cycle, you ask me, I moved the date of the United States back, because I originally tried plotting it from July 4, 1776, because that's when the Declaration of Independence was signed. But I found that when I compared that and overlaid it with market analysis charts, I had to move it back 16 months to the American Revolution. That was the beginning.
Market analysis charts, i.e. you were looking to use the intelligence of cycles based on the work of the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. Oh, no, independent of that.
Yes, it was independent of
but
that.
But somewhat
my
influenced
study,
by.
I had the theory first before I heard of the foundation.
Right, exactly. And so you were developing a system by which you would be able to invest in the stock market wisely.
No. The only reason I did market analysis was to validate that the cycles were correct. Reason being, the stock market and various markets are a very accurate daily account of metering social change. Because when you can follow how much is being invested in where, and the upward volume, downward volume, and the price changes and so forth, highs and lows and what have you, advances, declines, ratio, you realize that you're monitoring the activity in a very accurate way. So I needed the math. That's why I chose the market. But I also looked at the anecdotal evidence of our behavior in terms of fashion and sports and politics and scientific achievements and mechanical and entertainment and everything else. And arts and literature and architecture and so forth. And I've documented this massively on kalarhythms.com, K-A-L-A-rhythms.org, excuse me, moved it. And but the point is, cycles aside, in the United States and any country, the world is moving to cycles of a greater duration, and we are now moving up into an emotional high for the first time in centuries.
But let's come back. Back to the redating.
Mm-hmm.
You found that when you used July 4th, 1776...
Oh, yeah, it didn't work.
It didn't lay out.
Yeah.
And so how did you determine what date it should be assigned?
I was able to determine that there is a 28-year physical cycle, a 36-year emotional cycle, a 28-year physical, 36-year emotional, 44-year intellectual cycle,
yeah.
And I wanted to get that phased correctly so that I know exactly when it was the peak, exactly when would be crossing the midpoint between high and low. The time of crisis is when that happens, either direction going down or up. So I started plotting, and I started comparing to the market data and some of the other things, and I was off. I was off consistently every month of where it should be. Until I started overlaying these charts. You know, imagine drawing them on clear cellophane paper and overlaying your theory of cycles with actual data. So you move it back till it all lines up, and guess what happened? The beginning point moved from July 4th, 1776 to spring 1775.
April?
Well, in April 1920, that's when we started the American Revolution. But what happens is when you enter a year...
April when?
April 1920, Concord Lexicon, 1775.
1960.
Huh?
You said 1920.
Did I?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Let's see.
The American Revolution began after spring. See, there was a...
I thought this was revisionist history all of a sudden.
No. Well, he did change it, but he didn't change it that much, as far as I know.
Please go on.
The crossover year, it coincides with the tropical year. And so what happens in the beginning of spring, if it's a crossover year, from that spring to the following spring of any country in a crossover, you're in a crossover year. And at any time during that year, you can have the crisis erupt.
So this was more when they got together and decided to do the revolution versus when they actually wrote the document. Is that what you're saying?
It was when
people started organizing with thought and emotion that created that energy, that created that intention and that inspiration.
That led to
the Declaration of Independence.
Have to exist first before you say you exist. That's our birth certificate, but we signed it ourselves.
But that's fascinating, because we don't think of that. We don't think of how we exist before we exist.
Exactly.
We are still that thought.
If we're measuring only through action, then that's only one parameter of measurement. But if we measure from, you know, you've developed something called intention technology, which is, of course, when you recognize and acknowledge that you exist and you've signed your own birth certificate. I've never heard of that one before. Someone's got to do it. You know, but you've got an intention to have a certain kind of life, which is, in that time, independence from, you know, from the king.
Exactly. It was in the early 80s that...
That was the beginning of the movement.
The beginning of the unrest, the beginning of the unhappiness and
exactly.
What was going on. And, you know, first it starts as grumbling and complaining.
Exactly.
You know, and then there's
this
more than one person getting together.
Unsettling feeling.
Right.
Right.
And that's, I think, what we're seeing now with social media, is that people are able to do that at a very faster rate. You know, if you still look at stuff that's happening in Egypt and those type of things, you know, where it used to be, you know, one or two people, you know, would hang out and maybe at the bar or whatever, and they're just talking, you know, convincing over some beer. And now they're able to share that on a global level and at an accelerated pace. So that's what's interesting is, you know, to find out about the movement of the emotional and the mental cycles.
Yes.
Is because things seem to be happening at a little bit of accelerated pace where, you know, before, you know, when you looked at manifestation, it took forever to make something happen, you know, and it was always this meditating and praying on it every single day and hoping. Now you have instant manifestation where sometimes you just say something and then next thing you know, someone calls you, you know, and things just start happening much more rapidly on the planet. And so, you know, when you look at, you know, back to Japan, we got to look at, you know, what is going on here where there's been a lot of earth changes recently. And what is the unrest or what is the genesis, you know, that has caused, you know, some of this upheaval? And is it a reflection of our own dissatisfaction or our own unrest that's causing some changes in the earth?
Exactly, exactly. And this really harkens back to essentially an indigenous understanding that we and our earth are one. And so what happens inside us psychically is somehow going to be manifesting on the earth plane.
Well, I mean, even this radio show right now, every single person that's listening and tuning into this radio show, we are all connected as a group. And there's not a separation between us. Sure, maybe we're the only ones that have the mics right now, but right now we're all connected at a deeper level. And that connection and that intention that we put forth can really change things.
Absolutely.
And it's what you can do with that connectiveness, or are you just kind of...
Riding the wave,
you know? Are you directing the wave in any way? Or are you, you know, trying to use that group consciousness or that group dynamic to move forward things? You know, to raise the conversation or raise the vibration of things.
Exactly, exactly. It's very well put. Let me let everybody remind you, I want to let you know we are on Progressive Radio Network, A Better World with Mitchell J. Rabin, and we are sitting in studio. In fact, we are video streaming today. So if you want to go to GaryNull.com or PRNcom.net, you can tune in and observe the dialogue. We are speaking with Tracy Ingram, who is just speaking about group consciousness. And prior to that, we were listening to David Katzmeier, the founder and mother and father of colorhythms.org. And it's interesting because the fact is that we are living simultaneously on a number of different levels and dimensions. And some of what you were just saying, Tracy, helps to highlight that. So either we can just be passing time with our energy, and all we are is energy beings, and we can just pass time and have a friendly, pleasant conversation, or we can harness our energy, being mental energy, emotional energy. The Buddhists love to harness their emotional energy in the form of compassion. Richard Bandler, one of my teachers of neurolinguistic programming, wrote a book called Using Your Brain for a Change.
Oh, you don't want to do that. Don't
no,
listen to that. That's a bad
that.
Idea. No.
And he basically said that when we are just on idle, our minds are just running rampantly in any which direction here and there. And all of that is just fine. But when we focalize that energy toward a certain outcome, God knows. It's like having a motor that's just running on idle all day long, except for getting a few of the things done that we need to get done to ensure our actual survival. Well, that's a pretty low-grade way of living, given all of the magnificent array of choices.
Right, and that's the thing, is we don't really realize how much we're on autopilot. I mean, how many people have driven home
exactly. And
then they get home and they don't even remember the entire ride? I mean, so much of the stuff we do,
yes, exactly.
It's just on autopilot. We don't
right.
even realize we're doing it. It's like, you know, we're not really required for a lot of what's going on. And really going back and going, no, you know, being present, you know, having a moment of presentness and being here and really being conscious, you know, and whether it's compassion or just feeling. I mean, what you were saying about, you know, the rise of the emotional cycle, you know, it makes me think that it might be okay for men to feel again. You know,
yes.
I mean, if you look
yes.
at it through history, you know, there wasn't really any emotion that was allowed.
Yeah.
And so really, you know, to be able to be present and not have to just put up an exterior or a wall and be able to, you know, really be with someone, you know. And so if you're having a conversation, you know, or even someone that you've run into on the subway, you know, to be able to just, you know, for a moment, you know, just share a moment. You know, sometimes you don't even need to say a word, just a glance and just a acknowledgement that the other person exists. And those little things, you know, help to perpetuate that feeling of it's okay. You know, one of the things that happens in a crisis is people just panic, you know, and sometimes.
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting point that you're raising relative to the Japanese in particular, mm-hmm. because as character development goes and cultural variation, the Japanese are very staid, incredibly disciplined, and many would say culturally stoic. And their ability to kind of deal with the horrors that have befallen them, literally 10, 15,000 people dead, missing, covered in rubble. There's a fabulous story of one man who floated out to sea on his own roof and 6 or 9 days later came back. You know, there was a woman I told you both about, 82 years old or so, who rode her bicycle, God bless her, out of the way of the tsunami. And she was being interviewed on a TV station in one of the gyms that was set out as a refuge camp, basically, you know. I mean, there are stories of the miraculous and of the heroic that are, of course, emerging here. But it's interesting because Americans don't have the same kind of emotional discipline, and they tend toward hysteria, anxiety, what have you, panic. Mm-hmm. The Japanese or the Chinese really do not. But there's the flip side that you brought up, Tracy, which is that maybe men will have a chance to have a greater emotional latitude, a greater emotional intelligence, after all, instead of just anger or saying, no, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about me.
Right.
Pain?
Well, it sounds funny, but it's so much of our culture, and to really be able
Indeed.
To have that, you know, and a lot of especially people who have intuitive gifts find that their emotional connection, not the conversation that's going on in their brain, but it's the emotional connection that's really giving them access to some of the intuitive gifts and to being able to trust. Which is really funny, but I run into people all the time in practice that have been consumed with fear, and they don't want to trust anyone anymore. And so what they do is they shut down their heart and they shut down their emotional connection, and so they stay in their head where the fear resides. So they've shut down their only method of understanding who to trust.
And getting free of the fear. And distrust.
And distrust. We lock ourselves into that pattern. But really, I mean, I live in Florida, and, you know, when we have hurricanes come up, you know, yes, we have a lot more notice. I mean, more notice than a tsunami. You know, I mean, we have, you know, days, sometimes weeks notice that a hurricane's coming. But what happens is those are days and weeks when fear is being built.
Yeah.
And people are building up that anxiety. And that is oftentimes worse than the actual storm. And so really having a cool level head in a state of emergency is something that, you know, everyone can learn. You know, having a few things. I mean, Japan is one of the most, you know, prepared nations out there. You know, and for a lot of ways they were very prepared, but there was just so much destruction. And with so many other things that were going on, especially the nuclear reactors, that maybe weren't as well prepared. And they are experiencing now, like, well, what do you do? You know, you could be calm, but what do you do? You know, but panic doesn't necessarily move you forward.
The action forward, exactly.
Action forward.
Exactly. Sure. No, well put, well put. Dave, thoughts about this?
There's a difference between responding to a situation and reacting to it. And all reports coming out of Japan is that the way that everyone there is dealing with this confluence of crises is very cool, calm, and collected. They're using their heads in the crisis areas. And I think this is characteristic of many of the cultures in the Orient, which is that they have long been intellectual leaders. You find intelligent people all over the world, But there is such a thing as a character of a culture, a character of a people. And when we talk about physical cycle, emotional cycle, and intellectual cycle moving in rhythm, sometimes the strong will lead, sometimes the spirited will lead, and sometimes the smart will lead. As the intellectual and the emotional cycle is rising now, the baton is being passed. The Foundation for the Study of Cycles reported that there tends to be a 500-year cycle of parashifts between the East and the West. I've observed that there's a 528-year intellectual cycle that coincides, it correlates with what the Foundation for the Study of Cycles is saying is a shift to the East now. That's because of a 528-year intellectual cycle. Therefore, in addition to China becoming the world power, I think that we're going to find smarter ways and alternatives to producing energy, and I certainly hope we don't see any more of the kind of things leading up to the disaster we're in right now. And we're going to care enough to do it because of the emotion. Feel the feeling.
Well, I mean, that's one of the ripples that I saw with Germany coming through the news, that they are shutting down some of their pre-1980 reactors. They stopped production of the new reactors. You know, so a lot of the European Union itself has put a hold on it, but Germany has really come out about really stopping some of the production. You know, and the challenge is energy does have to come from somewhere. You know, so as a business person, you have to be realistic about how things work. But as a, you know, environmentalist, you have to look at, you know, what's best for the environment. And mixing those two policies is not necessarily always easy answers.
Well, because brawn has beaten brain for this past cycle, the fact is that there were some brains that were cooking over the past 50 to 100 years. And one of them is a hero of everyone at this table named Nikola Tesla.
True.
And he developed means of generating energy somewhat using magnets, permanent magnets, and other means. Really, really interesting things that would allow us, and the changes that have taken place in the material sciences since, and just the brain trust of humans across the world, that we now have electric motors. I've been working on this for the past several years. Good friend of mine has the intellectual property of and the patents for a motor that will run 96-97% efficiently, and the Chinese can't wait to get their hands on it, and I don't blame them, and as do many other people in pockets across the world. Since you mentioned Germany, Tracy, Germany has approximately 60-70%, I've heard, energy generated through wind. And some of the rest is solar.
Wow.
So there is this interplay and confluence between just these, and yet there is a bevy of others that can be brought to the foreground. And they were buried. They've been buried for 50 to 100 years. So with the downturn of the physical cycle and the upsurge of the intellectual and emotional, i.e., we care about our earth, we care about such principles as sustainability, renewable resources, and respect for that which gives us life, we can really come to another level of a renewable basis to our energy systems.
Well, and it does put us in a good place because when
does that make sense to you?
It totally makes sense. And with that, you have, you know, the economics of business going behind, or commerce coming behind renewable energy.
You bet.
That they need a solution. And, you know, we've always been really good when we're down. Anytime that we need a solution, we can always find one.
Crisis There's, as opportunity. Thank you.
Know,
you.
It's a challenging thing to look
Mr.
at.
Mr. Dow.
but it is. Crisis is opportunity. You know, whenever there's a problem, whenever there's a really big problem, there's a big opportunity. You know, and it's that lemons, you know, make lemonade scenario that, you know, when you look at that, you know, yes, there's a problem right now, but if you look at the sales of potassium iodine, you know, for people who are interested in trying to save their thyroid glands,
right,
you know, that's going through the roof. There's a lot of things that are working out of this situation, and a lot of innovation, I believe, will come from this too, of how do we make the world a better place? How do we make it safer? You know, when something like a nuclear meltdown, you know, if we're at that point now, is really something that it's kind of like smoking. You know, people don't really get the instant they're going to die after the first cigarette. it's not till 10 or 20 or
exactly.
in this situation, 40 years down the road.
Slow death.
Yeah. I mean, from what I heard, yeah. is actually February, they actually were getting ready to decide whether they're going to decommission this reactor. And so just a month before, you know, the tsunami hit, they actually just decided to extend it for another 10 years. And it seems that maybe the, you know, Gaia or Mother Nature wasn't happy with that solution, you know?
Greed in the face. You know what's interesting about the word green and green thinking is that, of course, it's too obvious to say it's a double entendre. Mm-hmm. So you have green thinking, meaning, of course, using resources wisely, renewably, and sustainably. And the other thing is that it generates what we refer to as money as greed. Mm-hmm. So it's Paul Hawken and others for 20 to 30 years in his Ecology of Commerce outlined the good economic common sense of ecological thinking. After all, it has the same ancient Greek root, echo, which actually means home. You know? So it's interesting when you come full circle. I remember literally as a teenager thinking, this pollution is crazy. It can never pay off to let smoke belch into the atmosphere when eventually you're going to have to clean it up, even if the laws support, allow this kind of pollution, because your kids are going to die and your grandchildren. It doesn't make sense. It's eventually going to have to get cleaned up, and the bill then is going to be a whole lot higher than it would be now. So on purely economic, you can even be greedy and think ecologically. Mm-hmm. I don't like that scenario because it doesn't say much for emotional, psychological, spiritual development. But even there, do you know?
But you notice in that sentence you didn't say physical development. And I think really what, you know, what David was, you know, highlighting there was the fact that it was the brawn that was leading it. You know, almost the bullying of the intellectual, emotional
Very
cycles.
True.
And so that was pushing through, not caring about, not trying to reason with the brawn. It was moving forward in spite of itself. And now we're at a point now where the reason and some of the intellectual, emotional, and the real interconnectedness can start to play a more dominant role in how we interact and how we treat each other.
Exactly. Beautifully put. Dave.
Exactly. So physically based thinking means thinking in the short-term return. What is the immediate, you know, consequence? So how is it going to affect the bottom line, as we hear so often? Intellectually based thinking is more long-term, transcending across your immediate gratification or sustaining your conspicuous consumption or increasing your materialism. And as we are intellectually based and think more long-term, we're going to start thinking what's going to happen maybe in the later part of my life or the next generation. Yeah, Native Americans used to say, whatever you do now, plan for how it's going to affect
seven
generations down. That's smart. So, you know, we're beginning to catch up with the past.
Exactly.
And this is the era that yeah. we're moving into right now. And yeah. A time of caring, a new romanticism, a new artistic era, and a new rationale, a new age of reason, and a less of might makes right, because the physical cycle is declining into an era of reform, where we clean up the heyday, the clamor and the din of the machine age, and we're moving into, through this current crisis, is the birth pangs of a whole new era for our civilization to last 2-3 centuries.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. But I'll tell you, I'm curious, though. If we're moving out of the machine age and the industrial base of an economy is what allows it to actually move forward, and one of the reasons there has been such problem here at home with jobs as that our manufacturing base has all but disappeared and gone elsewhere. How do you reconcile the change in cycles with that particular point?
Don't do things the old way. There's a time, there's two things that are true. Do what has worked if you want to be successful. And the other thing is true is if you do what has worked, you will fail. the difference between those two axioms is, what time is it? And it's time to change.
Okay. That was very poetic. Now, from a practical point of view, how do you discern the difference?
That means don't have standardization, centralization, mechanization of everything. Mm-hmm. You don't have these megalithic factories.
Metropolis style.
That's right. And the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about. These are not the power centers of the world anymore. The power centers are shifting to where Gaia has emotionally based energies manifesting, which are fixed globally, and intellectually based energy manifesting, which is fixed globally, and physically based energy. Those powers are declining. So what you want to do is catch on the different wave. The United States has proven to be very adaptable. If we continue to go on to be totally industrially based, as opposed to be recognizing that the world is flat, as it has been said, and realizing that we've got to be more virtual and transcendent, that is our future. We can do it unless we hold on with greed to the existing powers. Castles are crumbling now. Let go of what brought you greed and move on to something that's smarter, or you will fail.
I review these kinds of cycle patterns that you're referring to, in a sense, from a neurobiological point of view, i.e., when we as a humanity start to move into our higher level brain functions, we actually shift our genetics so that the next generation can, in that way, have a more activated prefrontal cortex and cerebral cortex.
Indeed.
Why? Because the habituation of the group as a collective has become accustomed. Just like we were talking about Japan and the Orient in general, they have a different kind of relationship to their emotions, to their mind, and to their bodies.
I believe that we may even be able to alter our ontological development as we go forward, and the future ain't what it used to be.
Yes,
so
as
choose.
Yogi Berra used to say.
Yep.
One of my heroes.
Yes,
exactly. And so what that would sort of suggest is that even though a brawn cycle, a physical cycle, is in our future, it might be able to operate at a different level, sort of like on the basis of a different operating system.
Absolutely.
What do you think, Tracy?
You know, upgrades always happen. You know, there's really always, you know, especially from a tech point of view, it's always about upgrading.
Upgrades and downloads.
The next level and in improvements, you know.
Yes.
And as a collective society, we're working together to figure out what's wrong and what's right. You know, from a government political standpoint across the world right now, we're seeing changes in what we feel or what people feel in general is right or wrong. You know, from an environmental standpoint, people are starting to wisen up, or they're starting to embrace some of the things that may have been inconvenient. You know, it might not be convenient to recycle. It might not be convenient to not throw the can out the door. But they're starting to feel that, well, this might have a meaning. You know, and so when I talk about upgrades like that, what we're doing as a mass consciousness, we're just taking those quantum leaps and moving to that next stage where the minimums of before, you know, have become much higher, you know, so that the lowest level of energy or of collectiveness between us is at a new level, and that we're all working at a higher level. And I think one of the things that we see is some of these
cycles is really just jumping. Exactly, exactly. Quantum leaps, for instance,
is
not just a restaurant in the village, you know. Yeah, you know, and because you and I, Tracy, are involved in the use of energy medicine, especially for human beings and their fields, if you extend our field, of course, it goes to include the Earth and the larger morphogenetic field of the entire picture here. And so I was thinking as we were talking about how to intelligently use our knowledge, and with our wonderful harmonic energetic balancing program, we could take photographs as an example of what's going on in Japan. In fact, I'm surprised I haven't thought about this and done it yet, of taking those photographs and putting them on our energy balancing system and sending love and light and certain specific affirmations, even about the power going on and the cooling system kicking in to keep the fuel rods cool so that we do not have more of a disaster on our hands that really spreads worldwide. Your thoughts?
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot that you can lend, and that's what I meant from the beginning when I said lend your energy. Lend your thoughts, lend your intentions, and even if you don't have some of the advanced biofeedback technology that you know that we're working with, there's a lot of things that everyone can do. One of the challenges comes in is when we try to manipulate, and we do it for personal reasons that sometimes doesn't go wrong. I especially in Florida, I've seen it sometimes where hurricanes would move in square formations and very unnatural things where people are trying to help move things forward, and it's not necessarily they're working against each other. So one of the things that happens is let's focus on the people who are trying to help and focus on, like, you know, making things better, not trying to directly manipulate. But if you could send your love, your light, your energy in a unconditional way, that is going to be a lot of the best situation, because you're not going to directly try to manipulate the situation.
Well, I want to just thank you both so much for being a guest on A Better World today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really, it's been a pleasure to have you both. And I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. This is Mitchell J. Rabin for A Better World. Thanks so much for joining us. Visit us at our website, www.abetterworld.net. Also, go to colorrhythms.org and to learn about the cycles from David Katzmeyer and Tracy Ingram, ingram.com, to learn more about the intentions of technology and your own intentions. Again, thanks so much. Join us next Monday as we carry on creating a better world.